Hello, and welcome to this podcast focusing on the treatment of patients with non-small cell lung cancer and MET alterations. In this episode, which includes excerpts from a recent educational symposium, doctors Sandeep Patel, Erminia Massarelli, Ignacio Wistuba, and Jorge Nieva discuss new developments in testing and treatment approaches for MET-altered lung cancer. This activity is provided by PR and supported by an educational grant from AbbVie. First, Dr. Sandeep Patel, a medical oncologist from UC San Diego, introduces the different types of MET alterations in lung cancer.
Let's talk about MET carcinogenesis. So MET biology and its multifaceted role in lung cancer carcinogenesis, this can be overexpression, amplification, and mutation. And so we do kind of see the central dogma of biology play out. And it's really important because as we think about therapies for MET, as we think about therapies for HER2, and as you just heard for EGFR, it's not enough to say someone's EGFR positive or HER2 positive or MET positive. The way in which they have the aberration is very important for treatment selection. Now, overexpression, which is protein level and best detected by immunohistochemistry, has been associated with higher stage and worse outcome. And in multiple meta-analyses, including postoperative studies, this has been associated with poor overall survival. So high protein level overexpression, poor overall survival. Now, MET amplification, which is a genomic level event, so best detected by tissue FISH, fluorescence in situ hybridization, but many of us rely on next-generation sequencing to detect these aberrations, is based on detecting the number of amplification events relative to a control. So here being CEP7, this is done with HER2, for example, more commonly for those that are in a community practice. And an NGS can also do this, though maybe with less sensitivity, especially with less sensitivity by cell-free DNA relative to tissue. Now, MET exon 14 skipping mutations, this is a genomic event, takes place across the intron. So these are actually very hard to detect by next-generation sequencing from a molecular pathology standpoint, and actually optimally are detected based on RNA-seq-based methods, similar to some of the more cryptic fusions, though current DNA-based NGS, including cell-free DNA, has been optimized for detection of this aberration.
In the next few minutes, Dr. Ignacio Wistuba, a pathologist at Moffitt Cancer Center, describes testing considerations with the different MET alterations.
So just going to some pathological details of these pathology-related details from these abnormalities. So starting with MET exon 14 skipping mutation, I would like to highlight that it's infrequently 4% of non-small cell lung cancer, particularly adenocarcinoma. And it has been reported higher in a variant of non-small cell lung cancer called sarcomatoid carcinoma, a very aggressive tumor. It has been reported up to 37% in East Asian literature when there is no other driver. Tobacco is related, is associated in most of the patients that have been reported, so it's not a never smoker abnormality. And testing, it can be done as using NGS in tissue blood. There are most of these are DNA-based testing, which when you use hybrid capture technology is okay, but RNA testing has shown to be better, and there are some data that I'll show in some experience on picking up some of these abnormalities using RNA testing instead of DNA testing. So, and this was already explained, the abnormality that happened in the with the skipping mutation splicing of exon 14. And this Sanger sequencing picture is to show how complex these deletions could be. And then to highlight that when you have RNA-based sequencing technologies, you actually can detect more. And there are some relatively large studies that actually show that you overall pick 1.2% in general population non-small cell lung cancer use RNA versus DNA. So MET amplification is a little bit more complicated because the cutoff that have been used for definition is relatively unfrequent to 5% of non-small cell lung cancer, again, mostly adenocarcinoma. You get higher rates when you study, you go to up to 6% when you FISH because it's a more sensitive method because you analyze directly the gene on malignant cells. And then the definition that most people accept is a MET copy that are 5 or higher, compared to the centromeric probe, because I'm going to show you why that's important. And NGS can pick it up. Tissue is good a source for this. And blood also can be used, but as it was explained, the sensitivity is a little bit lower. So here there's some example of the gene distribution. So you have the target gene, in this case MET. You have a centromeric probe that has to be located here in the long arm of chromosome 7. And then you actually, by FISH, you count the signals. When sometimes you have an aneuploidy or polysomy of a chromosome or an arm, both increases. That is not actually an amplification. An amplification is when you have increase only of the copy of the gene, MET, right? And there are several ways to define this by number of copies. Most of people use 5 or equal or greater than 5. Some people have used 10, as I showed you before. Or sometimes people calculate the ratio between the gene and the centromeric probe, and they have been used 1.8 or 2. Most people use 2, but I think that the copy number 5 is good to keep in mind. And there are some rare situations of actually cluster, really, really large amplifications. So a study I have done comparing NGS versus FISH in tumor and plasma has shown that for both 5 and 10 as a cutoff, there is a good concordance for NGS and FISH in tumor tissue, less concordance when you go to plasma. And then the last one is c-MET protein, that the range of expression in non-small cell lung cancer, mostly higher non-squamous at more advanced stages, is between 15 and 75%. This is because people use different methodologies and cut off to call it positive, and I'm going to go in detail on that. And is concordance between overexpression and MET amplification and MET exon 14 mutation, but there is some other situation in which those abnormalities are not present. You have overexpression of the protein due to transcription upregulation. And the way to the testing is immunohistochemistry of tissue. Challenges are different methodologies, cutoff and assessment criteria, and you know that is overexpression may change and have been shown when people are treated, patients having EGFR mutation, tumor having treated with EGFR TKIs, but there is some small experience with in patients that don't have the mutation and have been treated with TKIs that it doesn't increase. It seems to be a very stable protein unless it's a mechanism resistant associated to EGFR TKIs.
Next, Dr. Erminia Massarelli, a medical oncologist at UT Health East Texas Hope Cancer Center, discusses therapeutic approaches for patients with non-small cell lung cancer and MET protein overexpression.
Let's start with Teliso-V. So this is a MET-specific targeting ADC, which has as a payload the monomethyl auristatin E, which is abbreviated MMAE. So upon binding to the target of c-MET on the cancer cell, then the ADC is internalized, and then the MMAE is separated inside the cell and binds to the tubulin leading to cell arrest. In the Luminosity phase 2 trial, basically patients with non-small cell lung cancer with c-MET overexpression, EGFR wild type were included. And as you heard from Dr. Wistuba, that wonderfully highlighted all the different cutoffs. So basically in this case, the c-MET was assessed by IHC, and overexpression was at the cutoff of 50% IHC, so 3+. And clearly, as you can see in this bar-colored graph, the c-MET high was the patient subgroup that had the highest benefit, with a response rate of 34%, and c-MET intermediate was response rate about 23%. When you look at the median progression-free survival, however, it was across all the subgroup about 5.9 months, and then the median overall survival was 14 months. So upon this trial results, actually, the Teliso-V has received accelerated approval in May 2025. So when we look at the side effects, as we stated also in one of the questions, so there were several side effects that need to be highlighted. So one is the peripheral neuropathy, that overall grade 3 or higher was 7%. Then we had peripheral edema, 1.7%, pneumonitis. There were 5 cases of grade 3 or higher pneumonitis. And then vision problems, so blurred vision, keratitis, which represent, you know, new toxicities for medical oncologists and may be challenging, in especially in community setting where there are just not a high number of ophthalmologists to be consulted. When we look at what are the molecular characteristics of the patients who responded on the luminosity trial, you see in the bar graph on your left side that the most important characteristics was the molecular response in ctDNA at week 4 that basically divided the patients who had the highest benefit response rate, you know, 35% versus 23% who did not have a molecular response at 4 weeks. When you look at the gene alteration that were associated with response, so KRAS G12C was the one that was the highest associated with response, and TMB high, and then there were several others, which are, I think this is a very nice poster, was presented at ASCO, and you can look into the gene alteration. There is a label advice, basically, how to manage the peripheral neuropathy. So for any grade 2 or 3 peripheral neuropathy, Teliso-V needs to be withheld until the toxicities go back to grade 1 or less, and then resume Teliso-V at the next lower dose level. For grade 4, of course, we have to permanently discontinue the drug. For ILD and pneumonitis, for grade 1, we'll withhold the drug and consider corticosteroids as soon as ILD pneumonitis is suspected. Resume Teliso-V upon radiographic resolution. However, for any grade 2 or higher pneumonitis, then permanently discontinue Teliso-V. There are novel antibodies targeting c-MET targeting ADC antibody drug conjugates. One of them is MYTX011, which is a novel pH-dependent c-MET targeting antibody that also has a payload MMAE warhead. And if we look at the response rate, is about 39% on the high c-MET expression. Similar to the lower, actually, with 36%. And the side effects are also considering peripheral neuropathy and eye toxicity, which are also very characteristic of this payload.
Initial therapies for MET-altered non-small cell lung cancer consisted of targeted agents in patients with MET exon 14 mutations. Dr. Massarelli summarizes data on treatments for this population of patients.
Let's switch to MET exon 14 gene alteration, which are genomic alteration that, of course, underlie a different category of patients, a small number, up to 2-4% of non-small cell lung cancer. So we have 2 approved drugs, capmatinib, tepotinib, which have shown significant improvement in response rate, progression of survival, and overall survival. There is a real-world experience with both capmatinib and tepotinib, and I, you know, in this table, basically, you see all the options that we have so far. Being patient with treatment naive, the response rate is ranging around 60-65%. In previously treated patients, we go to about 44-45% response rate, and this was confirmed also in the real-world experience. Very interesting is the intracranial response, which we know for the capmatinib, tepotinib, and more recently, savolitinib as well, which is the most recently presented MET TKI. When we look at the common toxicities, we have, again, edema, which is a problem with MET TKI, with MET targeting in general, nausea, fatigue, elevated creatinine, and then diarrhea also. So what about the resistant to MET TKI? So this is, it's very important to retest patients because, you know, you can have different resistant gene alterations. And there are different classes of compounds that eventually could be useful in treatment in the treatment of the, this resistance. So if possible, rebiopsy patient, at least do liquid biopsies, even if the tissue, you know, might give you more, definitely more answers. So there are multiple multi-tyrosine kinase inhibitor, for example, cabozantinib, who have also been implied in the resistance to the MET TKI. So we divide here type 1A mutation, type 2, and type 1B and type 2. And then you see the different type of compounds. So crizotinib was originally treated, but it's still a possibility for some gene alteration. However, remember that crizotinib doesn't cross brain barriers, so it doesn't have intracranial activity. Then we have, of course, capmatinib and tepotinib and savolitinib, and then we have cabozantinib and other newer drugs such as merestinib and glizatinib.
MET alterations have been identified as a mechanism of resistance to therapy in patients with EGFR-mutated non-small cell lung cancer. Dr. Massarelli describes investigational treatment approaches for this group of patients.
As previously you've seen, MET alteration as resistance mechanism post-EGFR TKI has been successfully targeted recently. So this represents a significant number of patients post either first generation, second generation, most recently third generation. The largest data we have is from the Mariposa trial, where patients on osimertinib first line had a MET amplification and gene rearrangement about 13%. However, it decreased to 4% when in patients who were treated with amivantamab plus lazertinib. And there are different, as you heard previously, there are different combinations of MET TKI plus EGFR TKI. So one is the Savannah study in which a MET IHC 3+ or 90% or higher and or FISH 10 or plus patients showed actually significant response rate of 56%. The intracranial penetration is also very established for this combination, savolitinib plus osimertinib, and you see on your right screen, basically, there is they reported on 14 patients treated with savolitinib plus osimertinib and 4 patients treated with savolitinib plus placebo. And you look at savolitinib combination plus osimertinib, it definitely has a higher intracranial response rate, so 43% compared to the, but these are small number. However, you know, I think very, very significant. In the safety analysis, the combination showed peripheral edema, which was the highest, the most frequent, nausea and diarrhea. The SACHI trial, which was the phase 3 trial in savolitinib plus osimertinib versus chemotherapy, also showed the significant benefit of this combination compared to chemotherapy. This is a Chinese trial, so there are no U.S. patients included. In patients with or without brain metastasis. And the toxicity is also, considering the addition of the two toxicity of the MET TKI inhibitor plus osimertinib, so the majority are cytopenias, in particular neutropenias, and LFTs increase.
MET gene amplification per se remains an investigational target. As Dr. Massarelli describes, early phase trials have shown activity with targeted agents in MET amplified non-small cell lung cancer.
So let's go to MET-amplified non-small cell lung cancer. So as Dr. Wistuba said, there are different cutoffs. So crizotinib was the first TKI that was reported to be effective in patients with high gene copy number. They were, you know, it's depending on between 5 and 10 and then higher than 10. The highest response was in higher than 10 gene copy number. And then we have capmatinib that was studied in MET-amplified non-small cell lung cancer with a response rate of 29% in patients who had prior treatment, and in patient treatment naive was 40% with the median duration of response around 7 to 8 months and median progression-free survival of 4 months.
Finally, Dr. Jorge Nieva, a medical oncologist from the University of Southern California, along with Drs. Patel, Massarelli, and Mustuba, discuss a patient case and potential treatment approaches.
We're going to be talking about a case. 73-year-old woman who initially presented with a right upper lobe adenocarcinoma way back in 2013, had it resected, did well, and then developed a second primary in her right middle lobe in 2024. The patient was had an ATM mutation, TMB was high, had a KRAS G12D alteration, was PD-L1 null, and had a CMET IHC of 60%. She was treated with carboplatin, pemetrexed, and pembrolizumab in the first-line setting. She received 4 cycles and immediately had disease progression at her first assessment with evidence of a right adrenal metastasis. That was treated with stereotactic body radiation, and then within 3 months developed a left adrenal nodule. The patient then went on a novel KRAS G12D inhibitor on a phase 1 clinical trial, but her initial response was also progressive disease. So this is someone who essentially is not responding to anything. Now presents with bilateral lung nodules, and the question is, what should we do? And so really wanted to ask the panel who they really think are the best candidates for some of the possible options that exist. So certainly this patient looks like they're a candidate for Teliso-V. They could be treated with docetaxel with or without ramucirumab, with or without tumor treating fields, or it could have some kind of immunotherapy intensification as a possibility, and then I'd be open to hearing about other options that people on the panel might have. So would be curious to hear, would anybody think that this was a best candidate for one or the other of these treatments? I'd love to hear everyone's approach. Maybe we could start with Dr. Massarelli.
Sure. So I think this is a great patient for Teliso-V just because, you know, they. So first of all, was he a smoker or no smoker? I mean, I'm curious.
This was a non-smoker.
So non-smoker. Okay. So we know that failed chemotherapy, immunotherapy, and also a new novel KRAS inhibitor, you know, for KRAS G12D. So I think, I mean, I would not re-challenge with immunotherapy. I mean, this is clearly not, an immune hot tumor. So, yeah, I think Teliso-V and ADC. I mean, all clinical trials, of course.
And Dr. Rustuba, do you think there'd be any additional testing that needs to be done? Is the original assessment still good on follow-up? Should we be doing anything differently?
Yeah, so I'm assuming that the 3 plus 60%, needs to be added, I believe, to be precise. And then, as I, there are small studies that are looking actually how relevant would be a diagnostic biopsy to kind of tell us about c-MET protein expression after any type of treatment, right? And there is this consensus that I explained today that when you treat an EGFR mutant with EGFR TKI inhibitor, you assume that the protein is going to go up and you can have also amplification, right? But when you don't have that mutation situation, it seems that it's stable. And my prediction is that probably the diagnostic biopsy could be representative of what the tumor is having after treatment, but I don't know how many lines of treatment, right? So that's the other thing, or other type of treatment. So that's work needs to be done.
I think there was a poster was presented at ASCO that actually showed that the dynamic changes in the different markers. You know, it was not just MET. So at this point, I really don't know. I mean, if there isn't the opportunity to biopsy, you know, I would biopsy. But if it would delay therapy, I'm not sure. You know, there is significant need of treating this patient. So,
Dr. Patel, what would be your approach?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I would probably go with Teliso-V, assuming it's 3+ intensity. It's on label. It's available. I think when you look, the patient's already had IO. I think, docetaxel RAM plus or minus, you know, tumor treating fields could be reasonable, maybe after Teliso-V, but I think the best target that we haven't tried to hit yet is MET. I think we've tried to hit KRAS pretty hard, both immunologically biologically as well as with targeted therapy. And so I think it's time to give MET a try.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For more information on this topic, click on the link in the podcast description.